Welcome to a special edition of Girls on Film. I am Liz Whittemore. Tonight we're bringing you a small press conference with director Terry Gilliam. He talks to us about his new film, The Zero Theorem, which opened this weekend and is available on VOD. Set in future London, The Zero Theorem stars Academy Award winner Christoph Waltz as Cohen Leth, an eccentric and reclusive computer genius plagued with existential angst. He lives in isolation in a burnt-out chapel, waiting for a phone call which he is convinced will provide him with answers he has long sought. Cohen works on a mysterious project, delegated to him by management, played by Matt Damon, aimed at discovering the purpose of existence, or the lack thereof, once and for all. But his solitary existence is disturbed by visits from the flirtatious Bainsley and Bob, who is management's very brilliant son. Yet it is only once he experiences the power of love and desire that he is able to understand the very reason for being. The first question we had for Terry was about his use of Shutterstock photos, Google Earth, and GoPro cameras to keep the budget down. Take a listen.
Anything's a cheap, quick, efficient, that's what we go for. I can include the iPhone as well, which there are many lines of dialogue in the film that were recorded on an iPhone. Modern technology makes the process a lot easier. I mean, you get on the web and find, I mean, a lot of the stuff for the end, sunset on the beach, that's from Shutterstock, a lot of that stuff. And it's, you know, it's very quick. We can go in and say a bit of this. We mixed a lot of them together, but, you know, it was basically that. Things like that. All these technology, GoPro, I've always been intrigued with those, and so we stuck them all over the set. We didn't know exactly how they would be used, but as long as they were doing their surveillance, because, you know, nobody played to them. We did the scene.
Yeah.
But they were there recording. And, of course, we cheat and lie through the whole thing. This is the process of making films, so some of the shots that look like GoPro shots are not. We took our normal camera shots, warped them, made them black and white, made them look like GoPro. But all that technology is very useful. It makes filmmaking easier and cheaper, which is, to me, the key, because the cheaper you can make a film, the more you can say exactly what you want to say the way you want to say it, and not have to listen to a lot of corporate dickheads telling you what the public really wants. And so it's great, yeah, and that's what we do. So thank you. And I find on the web, I'm constantly, lurking around the web, because it's infinite what you can find there. You just have to do the work, but it's all there. And the thing that always bothers me about the web is how few people actually use it for the knowledge that is there. Most of it's used for what? Gossip, what am I eating, who am I sitting with, and porn sites, basically.
The next question is about the development of the script by Pat Rushen, from a short story to the full screenplay that you see in the film. Also, you'll hear Lucas Hedges talk. He plays Bob. You'll hear him speak and you'll understand why he was there and why he plays Bob, why he was cast. He keeps up with Terry throughout the interview. You'll hear a lot from him. He's really quite brilliant.
I mean, this is very different than the other films I've done, because Pat had written a script. I liked a lot of it. I thought it was full of interesting ideas. I never met him until we actually were shooting the film. He's an extra.
And he hadn't been out of the country.
That's right.
Until he came to Romania.
Yeah.
It was funny.
You're going to make the leap.
What does he teach? Doesn't he teach?
Writing, creative writing.
In like European history or something.
Something like that in Florida. And he's actually an extra in the scene when they're in the park with him.
And you sort of threw him off to the side so he couldn't ask any questions.
Well, that's the best thing. But yeah, he wrote this short story. The script was only vaguely related to the short story. I went back and read the short story. But in this instance, really, it was just, I didn't do much fiddling with the script. We did more fiddling with the script in post, in the editing, because we basically shot what he had done, and then I started playing in post and rearranging things, cutting the scenes in half, moving them here, blah, blah, blah.
Christoph was very diligent about changing words around.
Yeah.
And both of you were.
That's what we do. I mean, because that's what, when you're working with good actors, they've got their own ideas, and hopefully we've convinced ourselves we're making the same film. So, and that's how it works. And we every day we change things. We see what's going on. Why not do this way? This will work quicker. So a script is not a finite thing. It's the first stage, basically, of the whole process. And then in the course of making the film, you go to Bluegrass rather than London. You do, everything changes, and so you're constantly shifting the whole time. And that's the fun bit, because you surround yourself with good, talented people, whether technical, actors, everything. And, this is a starting point. Let's go to work.
One of Terry's other films is 12 Monkeys. Films these days tend to have a dystopian environment as their theme. It's sort of commonly accepted that that's what the future will be. So the next question is addressing that and Terry's thoughts on the subject.
Well, that's why this isn't a dystopia. This is a utopia. It's a wonderful world. Everybody's out there. They're dressed smartly. They got a lot of color. They're bouncing around the place. Cars are zipping back and forth. Shopping is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. What more do you want? I mean, the workplace, Mancom is fun. Rollerblades, scooters, zippy clothes, lots of primary colors. It's a fantastic place. There's only one guy who's the dystopic element, a misery gut. It's called Cohen. And he needs a kick in the ass, and this is one of the kicks. It's really that. I mean, everybody keeps referring to it as dystopia. If you think the world we're living in now is a dystopia, then you may be right. But we've been looking forward to this time for so many years. We've got all the goodies.
It's a matter of what perspective you see it from, and we see it from Cohen's perspective. And he has his perspective is very much nihilistic and dystopic and sad.
And it's really it. Yeah, I'm sure there's the odd man out.
There's a way of looking at the world we live in now, certainly from a certain perspective, that makes our world look dystopic. I mean, maybe it is, or maybe it isn't, but it depends on who you see it, whose eyes you see it from.
I mean, my tendency in films is to see the less good things in society and the world we're living in, because at least those are the things you can criticize and possibly comment on, and possibly it might change something in some small way. Not likely, but we can pretend we have some potency in our ability to help change the world. He's got to believe things like this. He's got a whole life ahead of him. I'm old. I know the truth.
Now it's time for my question. Check it out.
I was wondering if you could talk about the industry shift with VOD being released, a couple weeks to a month before the theatrical release. And I know, Lucas, you've sort of grown up in this generation where things are being downloaded, everything is instant. Do you even notice that shift being at the age that you are versus Terry being around for so long and seeing the industry change? What do you think about that shift?
What is VOD?
Video on demand.
Oh, okay.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
This generation.
Clearly, I'm not asking the right questions. But I've been noticing, talking to people, I've been telling people video on demand, and they don't know what it is. And so when we do, so you're okay. But there's definitely this shift where things are being released, three to 6 weeks before theatrical release. And I don't know if people are trying to reach a wider audience, especially for indie films. So I just thought maybe you could talk about that.
Have you watched on video on demand?
Film? No, I haven't seen it on demand. I haven't seen it.
He hasn't seen the film. This is an old cinephile. He's got old films.
Do you want to take it first? Sorry.
I didn't choose this. This is it's what the world has become. I mean, with small distributors, Amplify is one. Right. Okay. They don't have the kind of money that Hollywood has to get the audience's attention. So basically, we're relying on people who might like a Gilliam film or might have seen a Christoph Waltz film, take an interest, and it's a kind of I wouldn't say control, but it's a way of making the grassroots work. So people see it video on demand. Hopefully the word goes out. Oh, it's a great film. What I love on my Facebook page, because I use Facebook to promote, not to converse. And I watch people out there who say, oh yes, I saw it on video demand, but I can't wait to see it in the cinema. Or other people say, I'm waiting to see it in the cinema, if only there was one within 1,000 miles of my house. And that's the problem, getting films that don't fit in. It's harder and harder to get them into cinemas. And so maybe video on demand is the only way some people are going to see it. I mean, the reality is, in the past, when I look at my films, they're made for a big screen. But I know that in the reality, more people have seen them on DVDs than they have in the cinema. So it's just reversed the process a little bit. Yeah. Does that make a difference
for
you?
For me, I did grow up in a different generation than the video on demand generation. I grew up and I went to DVD stores with my dad and I went and got VHSs. So I feel somewhat dated. genuinely. And this is very new to me, and I don't feel comfortable watching movies on demand. I get to a theater when I get to a theater, but I am also disconnected from a lot of what's going on in pop culture because last year was my second semester junior year and this is my first semester senior year. And a lot happens over the course of 6 months. Not that much, but enough to not know what VOD is,
I guess. He's an absolute disgrace to his generation. Thank God. It is very interesting because my complaint is it seems we are becoming more and more infantile in the fact, oh, there's something interesting. I've got to put it in my mouth. You want something. But it's effectively that. I want it now.
Right.
Not that I'm not going to work towards it. I'm not going to wait. I need it now. And that's, in fact, infantile. But that's what we've become. And a lot of the film is resistance to that, to say, escape it. I mean, for me, coming to New York, it's like Cohen going out his front door. I mean, it's just like, what? In London, we're overwhelmed with stuff, but it's provincial and pissy small compared to walking into Times Square.
Right.
And you're like, what is this about? Yeah. And where do we fit into it? Are we just these little dots that connect around the way? I mean, are we just becoming social insects like worker bees? And our job is to keep tweeting and connecting, spreading those pheromones that they sort of go through the ether, as opposed to antennae going, and that's what we're doing, you're at a distance. How do you feel? What do you think? Oh, so nobody really has to have their individual opinion. People sort of are constantly communicating. Should I say that? Is that right? Have I gone too far? Have I offended? Am I rude? All these words keep coming up. And my attitude is, fuck this. I mean, people have got to start being individual and offense. I'm obsessed about offending people. Because you get a discussion going, maybe. You might start talking about things rather than ducking and diving. I watched my daughter say, oh, that was very rude. And? It was an idea. It was a thought. What do you think about that thought? You want to talk about it?
Lucas Hedges is absolutely brilliant in this movie. When he plays against Christoph Waltz, in each scene, he is an absolute master. So we were wondering about the casting process.
Well, okay, so I sent in a tape to Terry as an audition. And then a week later, I got cast, which is very strange, especially for a role of this proportion. That doesn't happen. And we arranged to talk on the phone. And you called me up, I was at Montauk, a house in Montauk. I don't have many houses. But we spoke, and it was, his energy was absolutely incredible. It was absolutely incredible. And he was insane. He was absolutely insane. And he was going on about what was going on in Romania and about Vlad Tepes and Dracula. And it was lovely. It was lovely. And it was clear right off the bat that this is a man who doesn't exist anywhere else in the world. Really. And he's an individual artist. And I guess that's... maybe my origin with you. Who knows? It was meeting Terry was some. I mean, hearing him for the first time is something I'll never forget. That was a terrible answer. I don't know what that says about anything. But Yeah, no, I have no interest in talking about what's next. I want to talk about Terry.
No, it was because when I saw Moonrise Kingdom, there was one guy that kind of popped off the screen for me. And it turned out to be this one. I'd never seen him before or anything. But, and then you sent that tape in. I had only taped one kid in London. There was one kid that was kind of interesting. He's the only person I started putting on tape. And Lucas's tape came in, and I said, that's it. Done. Match. It's finished. It was as simple as that. I didn't have a single doubt. He just cracked it. Boom. That's the character. And then I called him and tried to frighten him off it, but failed. And it was wonderful because you were really thrown in the deep end with someone like Christoph.
It was a scary transition from both from Brooklyn to Romania to working with Christoph and in a world that was very foreign, both from a filmmaking standpoint and from just a social standpoint. It really became a home, and it really worked out in the end.
I think what I remember, that we had our first dinner together,
yes,
when we were in Bucharest, Christoph, us, your mom, who else was
Melanie.
There? Amy, my
Melanie,
daughter.
Right?
Melanie was there, yeah. And we started talking about actors. Now, Christoph is very opinionated. He's wonderful.
Yeah.
He knows exactly what he likes and what he doesn't like. And I won't name the name of the actor who came up. We were like, oh, it was a terrific performance, wonderful. And he just said, no. it's the kind of acting you can't deal with. And Lucas, who had been on the side saying, this guy is really fantastic, rather than buckling under the Viennese onslaught, he held his ground. I thought, this kid's fantastic. He's not buckling because Christoph is coming. And that was so wonderful. From that point, I said, he's great. He's going to hold together. It was wonderful fun because some days, it was very nerve-wracking for you.
Yeah.
I know it. But on one hand, Christoph had really become, embraced you and was really working on him one way as an actor to another actor, and I'm working on him the other way as a director to an actor. And somehow, you survived both of us. It was great. It was really great because he worked the same way the character works in the film. Is that we, spent time with Christoph's character getting more insular, more fetal almost, and then this burst of humanity and youth charges in with, a bowel problem, and so suddenly the organic world is moved in here, and it's wonderful. We don't spend much time intellectualizing, we just do it. Get the right people, and off you go.
A few years ago, there was an incarnation of the film where Billy Bob Thornton was slated to play Cohen. Also, Terry was under the impression that he would have twice as much budget as he ended up with. So he talks about the differences between what might have been and what came to be. He also gives us a really nice insight about how they cut corners, which in the end made the film absolutely pop off screen.
Well, that was the main thing. It wasn't the difference in the two actors, because they would have done it differently. No question, and they both would have been wonderful. That's all. It's very simple, but it didn't come together then. I went off and made Parnassus, and then eventually we're back to, oh, let's see if we can make this. And when Christoph's name came up, bingo. The big difference was the fact that, 3 years earlier, we had a budget of $20 million, and then we made the thing for $8.5 million. So immediately, we're not shooting in London, and we're in Bucharest, where we're in a very different world. I'm relying on actors that I really love working with, some who are friends, some who we wanted to work together, to come on and work the scale and things like that. And we just, the film changed enormously. It was nice being in Bucharest because it's such an odd, interesting city. And that immediately affects what we're doing. And the lack of money meant that, you couldn't have normal, proper costumes. You had to fake it. Carlo Poggioli had to make things out of plastic tablecloths and shower curtains. He found this wonderful market, a Chinese market outside of Bucharest, where you bought fabric by weight, not by length. Not a yard of this. I have 3 pounds of that, sir. And he was just incredibly clever And I liked that situation because we were a small group. I only brought, it was mainly Romanians, and I think I brought five people from England or France or wherever, people I've worked with before. And that was it. It wasn't the big American operation pouring in and using the locals as slaves. They were our equals, and I just had several that knew me well, and we worked together. And so you cut through the bureaucracy of complex film, because it is a complex film, all the stuff. We have to create a world. We've got to build everything in there is invented, created in one form or another. And on a larger budget, you have communications aren't as direct. Things end up costing more because people will do three versions of something just in case the director changes his mind to cover their ass. Yes, there was no time for that. Bam, bam, bam. Everything was fast. And that's very exciting to work like that because there's no time to double think. It's what can we do? How much we got? We can't do that? Okay, let's do that instead. And so it's a form of guerrilla filmmaking, I suppose. And it's one of those. So I can't even imagine what it was going to be like back in London. That's all gone. I've forgotten whatever that might have been. I just know what we got.
Lucas Hedges was really young when they filmed, and it's only been 2 years. But it's heavy subject matter. So we asked him if he's gained any life perspective since the ending of filming.
Oh, absolutely, yes. No, I think it's interesting because I don't know how it changed when I left. I know that it changed, but I didn't really understand how. I think it's allowing for me to look back on it around two years, It's changed more and more as I'm able to look back on it, and you sort of realize an experience like that seems infinite in the moment, and 2 months can seem like a lifetime, especially to like a 15-year-old. But it's so fleeting, it's so ridiculously fleeting, and you have to. You have to really, really, really be in it, and you have to be taking risks all the time. Otherwise, you're just looking back on something. You're just looking back on regrets. I got way too sentimental there.
You haven't become bored like Bob is in the film at 15, that life is already boring you. Hopefully not.
No, but it is very fleeting, life.
Mm. Films are pretty extraordinary, and we're lucky to be able to make them because they're so intense when we're doing them. At periods like there's nothing before, nothing after. It's that moment, and you have to be in the moment the full time you're there, and then it's over. And then hopefully, it's like when you look back at a film so where you've done good work, and you look back at it happily, proudly, and say, "Yeah, did all right there."
Yeah.
And it's not much more than that. It's all you need to look back and not feel ashamed or that you were compromised to the point that you didn't do what you were capable of. All of those things. So, no, I'm very proud of what we pulled off, frankly. And it was a great collection of people to work with. I hope people got to understand that Romanians are wonderful people.
They were very hospitable.
They were tremendous people. They really got a really grab life. And we had wonderful times with the crew going off. We were up there.
I was up there. Yeah,
when we were up with one of the guys that worked on the film, he invited us to his country place, or he lives out in the country, he's got a place in Bucharest. We went out there, and there was his neighbor in the back garden. They're not exactly gardens, places that are slightly confined by a couple of poles, and a couple of Hungarians as well. And his neighbor had the still going, a good
old
still.
It was a hill, too. It was a gated hill. It was gated off. It was ridiculous.
But it was the still that I remember. He was brewing palenka, which is basically moonshine. It's really good stuff. But you're with people that don't have much. They've been through some pretty terrible times, and yet they've got a wonderful zest.
And probably people who are in this world, some of the people who are farthest away from social media and pop culture, and you feel like they really have lives that are uninterrupted by any form of media. It's crazy. They're really real people.
Yep. and there's no health and safety. people have to take responsibility for their own lives, which is quite interesting there. And you learn to survive, and you have to be good at what you do. I mean, I felt the crew, probably the majority of the crew, was as good as any crew I've worked with anywhere.
You remember Dog?
I remember Dog, exactly.
Sorry, there's a guy on our crew, and everybody called Dog, I guess.
Because he had a dog.
Oh, okay.
He was the only guy with a dog.
He was good.
No, they were really class people. Yeah, no, and that's what's nice, because it's like, well, for a moment, we've run away and joined the circus. That's what we have, and we make something, and hopefully, you know, we all got to show off and show what we can do. And that's it.